we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. This is part two of Adam Roa. If you missed part one, just go back to our most recent episode.
I remember when I heard that poem, I don't know if you had posted it online or not, or if it got tagged.
I haven't shared it online yet, no.
Yeah, so when I heard it, I remember feeling like it really resonated deeply. And there's so much truth to what you said about the safety and the nervous system when it comes to healing, because what I meant with intensity was not loving intensely, because I don't know how to do anything else. But what I meant was like, when there's that level of intensity that like, it's almost like you're fearing conflict because you know that's going to be intense too. And in my experience, in those types of relationships, my nervous system, I don't feel peaceful enough or calm enough to even be able to see my own patterns in the conflict because there's so much activation. Whereas when we're loving each other intensely, and I don't know that I ever know what casual date. I don't think I've ever experienced casual dating either. Like once I have a crush on you, I'm not talking to anyone else. Like I'm, you know, but the, when there's a level of safety, we love each other intensely, but the safety is there. What ends up happening for me is that, my nervous system is calm enough that when there's conflict, I'm able to way more quickly be like, ah, okay. I see where my inner child's running the show. I see this pattern. I'm being a brat. I'm sorry. You know, and so there's so much more healing because we come into more awareness of, you know.
Yeah. And I think that we need to recognize that we're saying yes to our partner's everything. We're saying yes to their wounds. We're saying yes to their, I had this situation happen where, I thought I had found my person, but it was long distance. And so we were creating this really beautiful relationship that was not devoid of conflict. I mean, we were figuring it out, but without the physical component. And so I was able to convince myself or believe that in some ways it was actually more real. Because we can override, like sexual chemistry and physical touch can override a lot of red flags. And so to not have physical touch or sexual intimacy and be able to just be speaking long distance, I thought, wow, there's actually maybe this is the slow love. Maybe this is the way in which I develop a healthier, long lasting dynamic. And ultimately there was a lot of trauma there. I won't go into the specifics, but there was a lot of trauma there. And so when we were finally in person, all of that trauma surfaced because there's certain healing you can only do in relationship, not on your own. And I was facing a very hard decision, which was, I really do believe that when we say yes to someone, we say yes to their wounding and their past. And we say, yeah, we sign up to help them regulate their nervous system so that they can heal. I hold that. But here I was facing off with this decision. Is this mine to do here in a brand new dynamic in which so many things were not met? Like my needs were not being met. There were a lot of red flags that I told myself would fix themselves when in person. Mm-hmm. And it went the other direction. And so now I'm facing off this question for myself of, do I just say, okay, I'm walking this path. I'm signed up for this. I am all in on this. Or do I say, this is an old pattern of savior complex showing itself right now as the me who's always gotten validation because I am a coach, I am a teacher, I am a podcast, I have all these things. I feel validated by my ability to help people. And I don't want that dynamic in my relationships. And so I ultimately made the decision, this is an opportunity for me to break a pattern of attracting partners that need me from the very beginning to hold massive amounts of space for healing, or from the very beginning, hold massive amounts of space for them to develop communication styles. Like I dated people who I could play a mentorship sort of role for a while because that was where I associated so much of my worth. And I don't think there's a right or wrong to these. And what I ultimately, why I'm sharing that is because we have to, as individuals, decide what relationships are for us. Are relationships about security and safety? Is that really our, because if a relationship's about growth, like for me, my relationships for me are about growth. That's kind of my thing. I just see the opportunity for growth being so massive inside of the intimacy of a romantic partnership. But that means that I'm going to need to sacrifice some level of safety and security, of comfort, to be in a relationship that is consistently pushing me past the edges of what is comfortable. And I know plenty of people who prefer the safety and security, as an example. And now they're in relationships where they have complaints about, okay, well, we're not really growing. We're kind of the same people. But I think making those decisions, what is the relationship values for me early on, is incredibly, incredibly important. And I just wanted to share that because to this day, I sometimes question the decision that I made around that, but I had to make one. And when we make those decisions, we let the universe know what we are or are not available for moving forward. And that shapes what shows up in our reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of, I had Layla Martin on and we talked about like the tantric approach to relationship. It's a vehicle for growth and liberation. And I do know that, I am always on this like grow at rapid speeds, I feel. And I do know that I feel that in relationship, I probably am a lot to hold space for. But I do know, though, that I'm always doing my work. It's like, even though we're in each other's care, like I am always working on myself. It's not...
Well, you asked me a question that I feel like I don't want people to leave this thinking I avoided, which is just, how do I take myself off the pedestal? Reveal some dirty laundry. I've been holding on to that. I'm like, I'll share any dirty laundry that you want around it. But one of the things is, I struggle even now because of the karmic wound that I had from such a young age, of feeling like there was something wrong with me. I developed coping mechanisms for that by trying to be right all the time. Mm. And so in relationship, I have a tendency to want to be right or to think I'm right a lot. And it's hard because I often am. I often am. And part of that is because why I feel that way is I put a lot of energy into learning. I am a massive student. I study, I hire coaches, I go to retreat. Like when it comes to certain areas that I want it to be, especially relationship, I put a lot of time and energy into. And so oftentimes I have quote unquote answers. I have directions. I can see things and I can have discernment. what it's taken me a lot of years to learn is none of that freaking matters when someone is in an emotionally dysregulated state. It doesn't actually matter if I'm right, if I have a logical reason for why we are where we are. We will not be able to have that conversation until I've been able to support my partner with regulating their nervous system and getting to a place where we can have that conversation. And with my past wounding of feeling like there's something wrong with me, I can default into getting defensive or self-blaming, like one of those two things, to a degree that can be difficult. It can be really difficult, especially for, we'll call it very opinionated women who also feel like they're right. That can be a very difficult dynamic. What I can say, I don't know if that's enough to take me off a pedestal. It can be very frustrating. And I can see that part of myself. Another thing is I can be self-absorbed. My vision for what I want to create on this planet is so big. And the amount of energy that I put into the amount of content I put out, the amount of creative output, the investment, I invest everything back into my business, into my team, into the expansion. It's an all day, everyday thing for me. And so in many ways, there's a self-absorption where I can get so wrapped up in what's going on inside the business, the things that I need to lead, the containers that I'm my client and what they're going through, all of these things that I can do a poor job of being like, hey, tell me what's going on in your, like, what is the thing going on with you right now? And I think that, yeah, those are two examples of things that I don't see them as giant red flags, but they reduce compatibility. It's just a compatibility thing. For me, I would personally prefer to be in the type of relationship where I am the primary breadwinner and my wife is in a more traditional female role, I guess you would say, right? A feminine role of holding the nest, of being nurturing and loving, being the mom. And in that role, in that capacity, someone who really understands the amount of energy I pour into my visions and my dreams and know that it's not just for me. It's not a selfish thing. It's for us. It's for others. It's in service. And if she can pour into me, that's a way that she is contributing to the whole. And someone who actually takes pride in that and loves that role. But what I've found is I also attract a lot of women who are also very ambitious and in their masculine energy of what they're building and they're growing. And that has caused issues in the past as well, because now we're both wanting nourishment for these ambitious goals. And I can be somewhat self-absorbed in that. So anyway, those are two examples that pop up.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, a lot of women may have heard that and been like, loved it, you know? but that's interesting that you said that. The two things that you brought up, like the two, what maybe you would call shadows, I can see how those have shown up for me in different ways. And I'm curious if our gene keys are similar, because I had Richard Rudd on, and I know like one of my shadows was self-obsession, but how it showed up for me was always taking the courses and always like, it's a different type of self-obsession. It's like, how much training can I get, you know? And I remember doing the existential kink worksheet, and one of my like kinks, I guess, was getting myself into situations where I felt wrong. And so I actually was drawing in a lot of people who were always commanding that they're right, right? Because then I'm the wrong one. So that was interesting. And then, yeah, I remember maybe in April or May, like proclaiming that that was what I wanted in relationship. I wanted to just love my children and kind of be like my husband's like courtesan and his nurturer. And at the same time, I don't know that I would call myself heavily ambitious. I want things to feel like silk. I don't want them to feel like hustling, but I, at the same time, I do desire to like write my book and speak to troubled teens and things like that. But I want it to kind of be an overflow of what I just said, or my deep desire, right? And yeah, I'm curious because even though I had proclaimed that as my desire for so long, and like you were saying, you know, about being right, like, it's interesting what you magnetize when you're coming from that place, even though, you know, and that was one of my questions for you, is about manifestation. So we'll jump back into manifestation in a second, but I do want to ask, because we're getting a little bit far from when you did bring up fear. A couple of answers ago, you talked about fear, and my fear, I feel like, is, and you know, as a kid, I always struggled with feeling articulate. And so I always struggled with feeling understood. I felt like people really struggled to, I just felt a huge struggle to feel understood. And I remember the adopted father that I had. I was taken off the streets when I was 16 and adopted by these youth pastors. And I remember when I was like 17, him saying, a lot of people ask me if you're slow. And I remember when he said that, though, feeling like it was true, like feeling like, but there's so much going on in my brain all the time that I think I come off as slow, but it's because I'm going so fast, you know, like is how I felt at 17. But still in my art today, like in the book that I'm writing, even on the podcast, because you'd think, oh, well, she has a microphone in front of her, like she's overcome this, but not at all. Like I often will think about a podcast that I recorded and be like, oh, man, that didn't come out right. Like, that's not how I meant it. And even in posts that I put on my social media, I don't know that it's a fear, but it's a consistent feeling of like, oh, that's going to be misunderstood. So I'm curious with you, how do you navigate fear when it comes to creativity?
Well, I have the same fear at times. I've had that thought during this interview. I'm going, am I all over the place? Am I literally am just saying things all over the place? Is there a thread that makes sense here for people? I hope they're following along.
I follow.
And so, yeah, I think it comes up a lot. I'm about to step into writing my first book of poetry. It's going to be poetry and journal entries and a number. It's woven together in a way that I don't even know yet. It'll reveal itself. And I have a lot of fear that people aren't going to like it. I have a lot of fear that I'm going to really struggle to complete it. And to me, who we become while creating is more important than what we create. And that's because the creative process is actually an evolutionary process. It is, to me, the most effective, efficient, and sustainable path for our spiritual growth. That's why I started the Creative Path podcast. That podcast for me, where I'm interviewing people about their relationship to creativity, is actually a personal development podcast, but creativity to me is the modality we use to grow and evolve. And so being misunderstood by other people is like second, third, fourth, fifth. It's like way down the line for me about why I would even create is because of what people think. And therefore that I have way more fears that I face off with first, before even getting there. And ultimately, if everyone thinks your stuff is good, it's probably not great.
It's too agreeable. Yeah.
Yeah, because the best art, the stuff that transcends, just
it challenges people and stretches them.
Absolutely. It is polarizing. And because this is all energy, vibration, frequency, right? So something that has an incredibly strong frequency is going to create a magnetic pull of similar frequency, but a polarizing effect on dissonant frequency. And so that the energetics of that are important to understand. And so when I have things that I've created that people get really upset with, that's exciting to me because the people who do like it, I know I've just created way more connection with them because it's a strong pull.
Yeah, it almost makes me wonder, then am I creating just so I can feel understood? If I'm like, you know, in a way, like, is that if that's a motivating factor, then that fear is going to come up. But if I'm creating just because I want to create, or because I want whatever's inside to overflow, it like has to come out, you know, then maybe that voice won't be there. I don't know.
I mean, maybe you're just creating to understand yourself.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like that's instead of wondering if you're going to be understood, because it sounds like that's, again, to me, that's down the line. I'm creating to understand myself. And then there's a curiosity around if other people feel the same way, and then they understand me, and that feels good when they do. And when they misunderstand me, that feels bad. But the actual thing of why I'm creating is far more, if it's a pie chart, 80% of it is I create because of the desire to know myself more deeply. When I wrote the poem Running, so we've mentioned it on this podcast, but the creative path, there's an episode called Behind the Poetry Running, where I say that and share kind of about it. That poem was, I was going through a breakup. I got a cabin by a snowboard mountain. I would go snowboarding during the days, and then I would kind of heal in the evenings. And one evening was really dark and I was struggling. So I went out to a restaurant. I sat at the bar by myself, and there was this older woman next to me. We got into conversation, and she asked me if I was married. I told her I wasn't. I said, I really want to be, and I'm looking forward to it. Then she found out I'd been traveling for 6 years, and she told me that I was running from something. And that was triggering, but I have this practice, which is when I experience a trigger like that, I like to journal as if it were true, just as a thought exploration. So I go, okay, if I was running from something, what would I be running from? And that exploration started as a journaling, and then it became a poem. And the poem was when I realized that I wasn't running from something, I was running towards something, this feeling in my heart that we spoke to at the beginning of this. And it was only because I decided to turn it into a poem that I actually was able to start creating new neural pathways. That's what creativity does for us. And by creating these new neural pathways about what I might be running from or towards, I discovered a deeper sense of this feeling that I have in my heart, that I was able through that poem to develop a deeper relationship to and a deeper connection to. And so I think that the creative process provides us a map for our soul's growth that is unlike any other tool that we have in this lifetime.
Yeah, I love that. It sounds like a much quicker process of Byron Katie's The Work.
I'm so excited to tell you about Paleo Valley beef sticks, which are one of the healthiest snacks on the market. I tend to not like beef jerky type snacks because they're usually so dry, but these are so juicy and full of flavor. I've been upping my protein for my overall health and physique, so I have zero guilt snacking on these. And because it's a protein snack, I feel fuller in between meals. They are also a great environmental snack choice because they're 100% grass-fed and finished, sourced from small domestic farms that contribute to regenerative agriculture. I feel good doing my part to put an end to inhumane factory farms that negatively impact the environment by the food I choose to purchase. Also, almost every meat snack on the market is made with a processing agent called encapsulated citric acid in order to have a long shelf life, but ECA can cause a ton of health issues. Paleo Valley Beef Sticks uses fermentation instead to give the beef sticks a long shelf life without harmful acids and chemicals, and fermentation is great for gut health. They're also only flavored with organic spices. I'm telling you guys, when you unwrap these, it's like literally juice comes out of the wrapper. That's how juicy and just flavorful these things are. You'll love them. Head over to paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. That's paleovalley.com/jade. paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. Now on with the show.
There are days when I could write 5-6 hours and I don't want to stop. I am only stopping because I have to. And then there's days where like I can only go 20 minutes because it's just not working. So I'm curious, what do you do in those moments of creative block? Do you just say, okay, not today, I'm not going to force it? Or do you have some sort of process to push through?
I definitely have a creative process that I follow and utilize over the years. But more than that, I think one of the biggest, most important skills that a creative can learn is how to be in relationship with their creative muse. That I believe in the creative muses. I believe that these creative ideas we have, like your book, already exists. You are a surrogate for it. And so there's a process by which you are listening to what the book wants to be, not just forcing it to be this thing. Yeah. Now, there are moments where the muse is present. It is there. And we've just hit a point where we have to sit in this alchemical fire of creativity and create new neural pathways in our brain that allow us to see where the story goes or what happens next or et cetera. But that's a process of needing to sit in it. And we know to sit in it because the muse is still there. But then there are other times where the muse is gone. And the reason why the muse is gone is because we are not in the right emotional state. We have not lived enough life yet. We don't know that it needs to go in this direction because we haven't had the experience that we're about to have in 2 days that lets us see, oh, okay, that's gives me this idea. And so to know that the muse is gone allows me to say, all right, this is where the poem, I don't know how the poem's where it goes next, but I know that now is not the time to force it because I'll just get frustrated and burnt out. Instead, I'm going to go live life and live life fully in ways that I know enhance my creative energy, my life force, my vitality. And I will come back to this consistently and I'll know when the muse is present. And I think a lot of people have masterpieces that never get finished because they think the muse has left and they abandon it when they're supposed to sit in it. And a lot of people burn out along the way because they force themselves when really they're being asked to be more yin and go into the being for a while so that then the next steps can reveal themselves. And learning how to differentiate that by developing a relationship with your creative muse is one of the most important skills I think high-level creatives can develop.
That's really good. And I feel frustrated with myself, but obviously it was in perfect timing that I forgot about this. But a couple New Year's ago, I was on mushrooms and I was like connecting with Saraswati because you brought up vitality and, you know, our vitality is our life force energy. And I remember when I connected to Saraswati, I hadn't begun my book yet. I hadn't even had the idea yet, but I knew I wanted to. And I remember her saying, like, if you want to create, just stay wet, basically, like keep connecting to your sexual energy. It's the same thing. And it is, my meditation practice tends to be partly my pleasure practice. And that is where a lot of that wakes up within me. And I didn't even connect the two, or I didn't even really remember that message from Saraswati, which is like the goddess of creativity, you know? And I have not utilized that when it comes to my book. Like that's still a very alive part of my life and where I do create some from, but I haven't utilized that when it comes to my book. And so I'd really like to channel that. So thank you for the reminder.
You're welcome. It's a huge piece that you just unveiled. And I want to just double click on it because sexual energy is creative energy. It is life force energy. And that is why throughout history, artists have had muses. It's not even that the relationships become sexual, but they are the type of relationship that generates and cultivates life force inside of the artist. And one of the things that I'm sitting with for myself is, so I've been in a period of celibacy for a few months now and sort of, removed myself from these types of interactions. And I don't know if that's supportive or not for me in the writing of my book. I'm about to go into 2 months of writing my book because there are times when I am more available where the moment I open myself up, suddenly there's flirtatious messages coming back and forth, maybe a sexy photo that comes in, and these sorts of, there's nothing that charges you up like a sexy photo in the middle of your workday. Suddenly you're just going, ah, it's just the sense of motivation. You get that electricity shooting through your body. And so I know that could be beneficial for writing a book. And yet at the same time, maybe my lesson is like just generating it on my own and being in my own pleasure practices and that sort of thing. I don't actually know. I will figure that out as I get there. But what you're speaking to is important because it's about intentionality. We need to, it's not also how we create best. It's how we create best for the particular project. Each project might require you to step into a different version of who you are. In fact, I would say that they almost always do. That's part of the growth.
Yeah. And I'm, two parts there. I'm curious if the groom where you spoke that poem at, if that was the inspiration behind that, because I know that's how he manifested his wife. He like held his seed for a whole year praying for her and envisioning her. But there's the book Cultivating Male Sexuality, and it talks about actually experiencing abstinence, but still running that sexual energy through your channel so that it doesn't block your creativity. I think it might be Montauk Chia. But there was one other, I guess those were the two things, but the... do you have something there?
No, his equation, he said, was God, celibacy, and semen retention. Developing a deeper relationship with God, having no sex, and retaining his semen was his equation for how he attracted his now wife. Yeah. And I was already... So my view on this is interesting because I have always believed that I want to attract my partner when I'm in the energy that I want my partner to help amplify. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So
women are major amplifiers.
Yeah. So, but if I, for example, go into a period of I've been in periods of celibacy where I feel very shut down sexually, mm-hmm. like my sexual energy, my libido just go as I kind of go inward. And I personally desire a relationship where my partner is so sexually activating, where mm-hmm. our dynamic is just one in which there's a lot of flirtation and ass grabbing and all of the things mm-hmm. that consistently keep sexual energy alive.
Yeah.
So my inquiry has been around, okay, well then that wouldn't that woman be more attracted to the version of me who is in that sort of flirtatious, open, what I feel is more magnetic personally. I feel more magnetic when I'm in that space. And that way, because she's attracted to that, there's a nourishing of that energy that we both want and will both be in support of. Whereas who I attract, if I'm low libido, shut down, more hermit mode, is I don't know the same person who's going to be attracted to the version of me when I'm back to the more gregarious. And so I don't actually know. I obviously am sitting here not being in relationship, being in a period of celibacy and questioning whether or not like what is right. And I think that, again, it just comes down to when I say right, it's just a listening process. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, as long as I can sit and listen deeply to what is true for me in any given moment and be able to discern, is this coming from fear? Am I giving in to insecurity? Am I giving in to a wound because my heart was so hurt from this last interaction? Is that why I'm shutting down? Or is this actually what's needed for me to go into a cocoon and really honor my book? And on the other side of that, it'll shift. But right now, this is what's being called. I think that honest introspective reflection is ultimately the only thing that I know to be true, is to sit in that consistently and ask that question.
Yeah, it is interesting. I anytime that I'm single, I'm celibate basically. And it's intentional, of course. But I'm still running that sexual energy very intentionally myself. But I just did a post about this, I think last week though, about how like, even when we fantasize about someone or when we watch something, whatever, like we're bringing that energy into our field and magnifying it. And so I'm so intentional with really only working with my own sexual energy, like nothing outside. And yeah, so there's so many different angles of that. And I think it's what you said, it's listening to what feels right in that moment. And that makes me curious about the manifestation, because you talked about what you desire, you know, breadwinner, trad wife, but I know you, like there's nuances to that term, but like with that desire, and I know that's a lot of people's desire now, which is so beautiful to see us coming back into that healed version of union. I truly think you know, there's a lot of healing that comes from us seeing that. You talk about with manifestation, if you don't have it, it's because you don't actually want it. And so I'm curious, like when it comes to, because you said like you keep instead coming into, you know, dating with women who are actually quite ambitious. And like I would relate this to my women's program and how I would love a certain amount of women to sign up, and how if that doesn't happen, like what is that? What am I actually desiring that's stopping that? So yeah, that's my last question for you. I actually have to pick up my kids from school and leave here in like 15 minutes. So
I can answer this last one, I guess. I mean, it's more a thought exploration. I think that ambition can look a lot of different ways. So the last relationship I was exploring, she had no business ambitions. She said she would be happy if her garden was bigger than the house. You know, it was just a slow living sort of thing. And I loved that. I really did. Mm-hmm. And, but there was an ambition to be an incredible mom. And that was really attractive to me. And the piece that was missing was also the like, support of what it takes for me to do what I do, and a real partnership idea of I don't look down at all on a traditional wife like role. My mom played that for a long time, and I deeply respect it. And I think that there's just seasons. You know, when I was younger, I dated a lot of really ambitious women, in large part because I didn't have the confidence yet that I could do it on my own. So I wanted someone that was in the trenches with me, where we were having like almost business meetings. We were building together. I had a partner in it. And over the years, I've been able to see that that's who I am. I'm fully capable of building this thing on my own with, you know, my team and stuff. And so again, I don't need my romantic partner to be in that with me. In fact, I don't even want to work with my romantic partner, because I think that it's hard enough. Like a family is a business. So a relationship requires its own level of work. I don't know how to even imagine raising multiple kids and maintaining our romantic partnership, and then adding a multi-million dollar empire on top of that. I'm not even sure how to do that. And I don't know that I want that stress. So for me, the dynamic of being in partnership is really intentional. I think that looking at, okay, I want a woman who is really excited to be a mom and who is ambitious about being the best wife and mother that she could possibly be. I also want her to have passions. I would love for her to be passionate about some form of art or gardening, or maybe she's interested in writing a book, or maybe she's interested in, like, for example, I have a nonprofit called Surrendered Artist. It's at surrenderedartist.org. We teach kids how to use art to process their emotions.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. And so one of my dreams is to lead an artistic sort of therapy summer camp where kids are learning all these, doing all these different art, dance and painting and whatever, as a form of learning how to process what they feel through this and do it as a summer camp. I would love if my wife was interested in running that nonprofit and like using, like being excited about helping kids, but you can see that it's not attached to needing to be the one that makes the money. It's not attached to needing to have like a whole empire built or anything like that. And ultimately, it would still be less important than the roles that I personally am excited for there to be ambition around. Because to be ambitious, to be the best wife and mother, means she's going to want to listen to podcasts and read books about motherhood. She's going to continue to bring new information around relationships. She's going to think about how do we strengthen our relationship consistently. And to know that my partner is thinking those things is very exciting for me. And yeah, so I want ambition, but I just want it to line up in a way that works for where I'm at now, which is very different than where I was three, four years ago.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so thankful that you have that nonprofit. I did music and art therapy with child soldiers that have been rescued in Uganda for a while. And my best friend that I brought up at the start of the show, Tom Shadyak, he opened a rock climbing gym in the poorest zip code in America in Soulsville, Memphis. And I'd love to connect you guys because I think that if you could do something like that at his rock climbing gym, it could be really beautiful. But yeah, thank you. I know we're running out of time. So there's a lightning round that I end every show with. And the first one of the lightning round questions is, if you could hug your younger self right now, what would you say?
It's all going to be okay. You're doing great. No need to worry.
If you could have the whole world read one book, what would it be?
Mine, when it's done.
Yeah,
absolutely. I am going to pour my heart and soul into it. And I hope and pray that it is going to bring a lot of really beautiful healing to a lot of people.
Yeah. If you could whisper one phrase to everyone on the planet, what would it be?
You are seen, you are heard, and you are loved.
Beautiful. That's something I say to my kids every day. Just as you are. Worthy of love and belonging. How can people connect with you and your work? I don't know when the book's going to be released, but like, how can they find you online and all of the things?
The best place is Instagram, adam.roa, R-O-A, adamroa.com. The website's there. It's a bit outdated. And then my podcast, The Creative Path with Adam Roa. It's everywhere you listen to podcasts. And then I send out like more in-depth stuff, both on my YouTube channel and in my newsletter. I really love to write. And so Instagram is really short form content.
I know, it drives me bonkers.
I know.
It takes me more time to fit my caption into it than it does to write the caption.
I know. And so for me, I'm actually transitioning more into just longer form spaces. I'm pouring more energy into my YouTube channel, my podcast, and my newsletter.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. You mentioned, about the book that you really hope that people experience healing from it. I feel that, everyone awakens something different within us. Each of my friends brings out a different side in me and each of them embody like a different feeling. My best friend, Tom, that I've brought up a couple of times, if I could say what he is in a human, it's, you know, there's this trail in Telluride that you climb up and at the very, very top, there's this waterfall, but it's like, it's a really hard trail to get to. And it's like, most people don't get all the way up there because of it. And, there's something about that trail that for me, like Tom is that trail. He's like, when you get there to the waterfall, like that's Tom. And my best friend, Laura, like if I were to say what she, you know, what she feels like, it's, she feels like boogie boarding in Santa Monica, but in November. There's something about it being in November. and for you, like before even interviewing you today, for some reason, what you feel like to me is the season of fall. Mm. And the season of fall, like, I feel like everyone, like by the end of summer, they're like, oh, I just cannot wait for fall, you know? And I feel like that's probably what your book is going to feel in the chest. It's like that feeling of like, oh, finally it's fall, you know? And it's like, whether that's like this feeling of like, oh, finally, like someone put words to my feelings, or someone, you know, whatever it is, someone I feel understood through, you know, Adam's words, whatever it is. So, yeah.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you. I really appreciate the poetic way that you view the world, and from your intro to the outro now, bookending it with such beautiful words. It's been wonderful to get to drop in with you, and thank you for having me on, and thank you to everyone who's been listening to this. You know, it felt like I was all over the place earlier. Maybe it was the cup of coffee and cacao that I had, but I think that these types of conversations are also very human. You know, it's, I don't claim to have any answers. I'm just sharing what I'm learning from this deep exploration that I'm in on a daily basis of being human. And I appreciate that everyone else who's listening to this is also in that.
Thank you for naming that. And you may have just been mirroring me, because that's very much my energy. It's like here and then here and then here. However, people listening to the show are very much used to it. So I'm sure they followed along just fine. Thank you so much. I'll talk soon.
All right. Much love.
Bye. All right. You can go to jade-bryce.com to sign up for my newsletter, Pleasure Ponderings, or to sign up for one-on-one coaching with me or any of the master classes that I'm currently holding. And you can go to paleovalley.com/jade. That is where you will see most of the supplements that I take. It's pretty much everything except for my nighttime supplements. I love their whey. It has colostrum in it, which is really great for hair and skin. I love their bone broth, which is also really great for hair and skin. I also have their bone broth meal bars. And yeah, I take their organ pills, their fish oil, really, really clean supplements. paleovalley.com/jade will get you a discount. I do get my sleep supplements from Bioptimizers. I get their sleep breakthrough and their magnesium complex. We are pretty much all deficient in magnesium. All of us. And not only is it incredible for your digestion, it is incredible for your sleep and your stress management. I have been using their magnesium products for like 7 years now, and I never let myself run out. So buy Optimizers, and code Jade gets you a discount there. And then I love two of my best friends have a company called Better Jerky. It's whole organ jerky. It's grass-fed and grass-finished. It's organic. And you're getting 28 grams of protein with organ meats. It's pretty much the healthiest thing you can have. Anytime I'm going to be out of the house all day, anytime I'm like hitting it hard in the gym, this is the thing that I make sure to have. Also, when I'm on my cycle, when I'm in during my bleed, I'm making sure to replenish with extra organ meats through eating these. And code Jade gets you a discount there at betterjerky.com. Pleasure wands and yoni eggs. I love the cervical wand. I love the Indian jade wand, and I love the jade egg. Those three are my favorite, but they have so many different products. The cervical dearmoring wand is, for me, has made a huge, huge difference in how I'm able to be intimate with my partner. And I teach to use each of these products with camera off, with one-on-one coaching. It's also modules in my women's program, but it's at, all of these products are at wands, WAANDS.com. Code Jade gets you a discount there. And then my dry sauna that I use 3 times a week for 20 to 30 minutes each time is from Saunafin. And the benefits of using a dry sauna are endless, like truly endless. It is one of the most beneficial things that you can do regularly in your week routine. So that's my favorite. I've used a couple of different saunas. This one's my favorite, although I love infrared and I like to incorporate that in from time to time. I will just use an infrared light in my room before bed, but the dry sauna is, I mean, the benefits of dry sauna just far outweigh anything else. And so yeah, Saunafin, go ahead and check them out. Thank you so much for tuning in and being on this journey with me. It would mean so much if you would leave a review or share an episode with a friend. You can also join me on Instagram at Untamed and Unashamed Podcast. As always, be a light, stay open, and remember, you belong here.
When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in Climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage and do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.